Hi, this is Cynthia Davis. Are you suffering from hoplophobia? What do you think about guns? In this edition of Homefront, Tim Oliver talks with us about hoplophobia, gun permits, and the laws pertaining to where you can carry. Stay tuned as we ask probing questions and hear rock-solid answers from a former law enforcement official. Welcome to Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host. As a writer, speaker, and former legislator, we discuss limiting government, fiscal responsibility, and fair taxation. I'm a mother of seven and a wife of one for over three decades, so I bring you my personal experience. And now it's time for Homefront with Cynthia Davis. Welcome to Homefront. Today we have Tim Oliver, owner of Learn to Carry in Columbia, Missouri. He teaches people what they need to know in order to get a permit to carry a gun. You may have wondered how a nice lady like me knew so much about handguns, so now I'll introduce you to the man who taught me everything I know about concealed weapons. So welcome, Tim Oliver.
Welcome. I'm glad to be here, and thank you for the kind words.
So we met a few years ago when I was in the legislature. I was invited to attend a rally in Columbia, and I found you there, and you asked me if I had my permit. And I told you that even though I voted for the bill, I had never taken the class. So at that point, then you graciously invited me to come to your class, and I learned so much from it. So let me ask you this. Are you surprised at the ignorance of the laws coming out of the legislators in our state? And does it surprise you that people can vote for gun bills and not really even know much about it?
Well, I've seen it so much I can't say that I'm surprised. I was surprised maybe 10 years ago, but there is just so much inaccuracy. So many people who don't know the subject matter, who think they're doing something good, who end up doing something bad, and then we end up with bad legislation. I mean, some of the bills that are passed, it is clear that, you know, the person who thought of the bill, the person who wrote up the bill, they send it to legislative research, comes back to our elected representatives. Either they haven't read it or they don't understand it to have, you know, just such sort of not well thought out things ended up being voted on and passed.
Well, the reason I supported it is because I support the Constitution. I support the Second Amendment. If our founding fathers cared enough about the right to bear arms, then they put it in there for an important reason. So I philosophically support the idea of people being able to defend themselves. I just had not been exposed to anybody who actually had defended themselves. So,
sure, and unfortunately, in this age and time, society has sort of become, there's a lot higher likelihood that you will need to defend yourself sometime during your life. FBI, Justice Department statistics tell us that if you live to be an average age of 78, the chances are you're going to be the victim of violent crime 3.2 times. And if you're the victim of violent crime, the chances against somebody in uniform with a badge being there to save you are about 99 to 1.
Well,
what do you think?
Yeah.
Well, you think about it. When you dial 911, what you're saying to the emergency services person is send a gun and a gun operator here as quickly as you can. Well, if you have a gun and know how to operate it, that time between when you dial 911 and when the blue lights show up is likely not going to be the rest of your life. Where you, if you're unarmed, it easily could be the rest of your life.
I'm 54. I have lived my entire life in a suburban area. I lived in a suburban part of Chicago, suburban part of Boston, a suburban part of St. Louis. And we were trained all our lives, if there's a problem, you call 911. There's really no reason for people to need to protect themselves. And if you live in the country, we understand it because it's going to take the sheriff a half hour to even find your address. If you live in the urban core, well, they all have guns all the time because they have a violent neighborhood or they have many more incidences where they have reason to be scared. But the problem in America now is you have a whole generation of people like me who've grown up in nice neighborhoods, never had anything bad happen, and never felt like, you know, they needed more than the police to protect them. Yet you're saying that it's a matter of personal responsibility. It's not a matter of will you be lucky the rest of your life, but if you're ever one of those people who does have to confront evil, what are we going to do?
Well, exactly. See, the situation used to be, I mean, I'm about 10 years older than you are, and I grew up in St. Louis County. And in all the time growing up there, I mean, until I left at about 18, I really never knew anybody who was a victim of violent crime. Well, it's a whole different situation today. I mean, I know a lot of people have been a victim of violent crime. And beyond that, the demographics of those people who are taking concealed carry classes has changed quite a bit from those people early on in 2003 and 4 who were gun enthusiasts, who had wanted concealed carry for a long time, to where now the students are more folks that aren't avid gun enthusiasts. They're not people who want to have a gun. It's that their neighbor got broke into, or there were break-ins in a neighborhood. Up here in Columbia, near where I live, there's a pretty wealthy neighborhood called Thornbrook. And this is sort of like maybe $500,000 at Up Homes. And last August, in 1 week period, there were 5 armed home invasions before noon, between 8 o'clock and noon. Then 3 of them, mom was home with the kids. Now, I can think of nothing scarier being a parent than being unable to defend your family against home invaders.
Tell us, what got you involved in wanting to teach a class on how to carry a concealed gun?
Well, I've been involved in firearms instruction for 37 years, and in the beginning, it was all law enforcement. I initially got interested in shooting through Boy Scouts. When I got my marksmanship merit badge on my way to be an Eagle Scout, I found something I enjoyed doing that I was pretty good at and all that. But as a young adult getting out of school, I became a Columbia Police Reserve officer. And on the side of our police cars, it says to protect and serve. And while we do pretty good at the serving part, no police, any place, do a great job at the protection part, because we just can't be every place all the time. And really, nobody wants a police officer walking around following you all the time anyway. It's, a little bit of an infringement on our freedoms. But after 2 years and seeing a lot of bloody crime scenes and a lot of victims who bad things had happened to, and only being there in time to write the report, to take the pictures, to, interview people and all that, the thought dawned on me that since we're never there in time to save the damsels in distress, maybe we should train and equip the damsels to save themselves. And so I started teaching the defensive skills, we call it defensive pistol craft, to anybody who wanted to learn, who was of lawful age and not a convicted felon, all those things. And consequently, a fair number of people have been able to save themselves from a violent attack or maybe even death.
Let's talk about the concealed part of it. I so much appreciated all your patience with teaching me, because you have to deal with a lot of novices who don't know anything. But it seems from the outside looking in, like, why would the government have a law that says you're not allowed to hide it? Wouldn't we be safer if everybody could choose how they want to carry their gun, inside or outside?
Well, that's a pretty interesting question. In that, prior to 1875, people in Missouri and a lot of places could carry concealed weapons wherever they go, or outside for that matter. Well, after were on the southern side got a sort of cookie-cutter constitution. I mean, our constitution is very similar to, like, you know, Arkansas and all the other states that were, you know, on the southern side. And in that, they banned the carrying of concealed weapons. And the idea was this. You remember the Jim Crow laws?
Mm-hmm.
Outlawed, you know, blacks being on the sidewalks or, you know, doing enough voting or taking a literacy test or do all that. This came about because the side that won, the North, didn't want freed slaves carrying concealed weapons. And this has been pretty thoroughly researched going back that this was, the ban on concealed carry, was part of the Jim Crow laws. And indeed, in Missouri, up until 1951, if a white person was stopped and found to be carrying a concealed weapon, that was the only thing they were doing, they weren't charged. But if a similar black person were carrying even a knife, even something else, they were charged. So this sort of overturns the last of the Jim Crow laws, and through the years 1875 forward, and we all learned the history on this when we had the concealed carry lawsuit, the anti-gunners brought, blocked the implementation, that they added different people could carry. First, of course, it was police officers. Then it was wardens. Then it was various people. And we spent $125,000 to go to court to find out that Article 23 of the Missouri Constitution did not, in fact, ban it totally. It said we can restrict it or we can control it, and if you go through these steps, you jump through these hoops, you can have it. Now we have shall issue concealed carry, and indeed every state now has some form of concealed carry. Some have shall issue, meaning if you fit through all the hoops, you get the permit. May issue is where you have to know the sheriff, you have to contribute to somebody's campaign, or you have to have a well-connected lawyer, like, say, in New York or, say, Massachusetts.
Well, let me give you a lady's perspective. Say I'm out somewhere in public. There are choices. There, I can either be surrounded by people who have guns that are concealed or guns that are not concealed. Don't you think we're safer as a society if people reserve that choice to themselves whether they want to conceal it or not? I mean, frankly, having an unconcealed gun may actually be a deterrent to crime, would it not?
Well, actually, whether it's concealed or unconcealed, it's a deterrent to crime because those states that have better gun laws have less crime. Dr. John Lott found this out in a research study in a book he published maybe 10 years ago called More Guns, Less Crime, various other studies to back that up. Now, when we come down to philosophically, I'm for open carry, I'm for concealed carry. But when it comes down to tactics, when it comes down to what's going to save your life, if you're the person at the place, say, robbery or something violent's going to happen, you wearing your gun openly makes you the first shoot target for the bad guy. And this was dramatically illustrated that shooting down, I want to say, in Maplewood, was it two summers ago, at the City Hall, where the bad guy came. The first thing he sees is an officer carrying a couple pizzas back to the meeting, shoots the officer, takes his guns. Tactically, I'm not in favor of concealed carry and not in favor of open carry. I don't teach open carry, but I support it philosophically because I want it to be a surprise that I've got a gun. I don't want to be the first shoot target for the bad guy who I don't know that happens to be in the room.
Right, I agree with that. Furthermore, it might further inflame a situation if everybody knows who has guns. I'd rather be walking down a dark alley with somebody with a gun than have a society where people aren't allowed to have guns.
And you have the situation where you have these folks who are hoplophobes. Hoplophobe is a psychiatric diagnosis of people who have an irrational fear of guns. Now, this is just like people who fear water or fear heights or fear snakes or fear whatever. They have an irrational fear of guns. So you're out at the mall shopping, carrying openly, and some hoplophobe sees you carrying your gun. Well, what do? they call 911 and they say, woman with a gun. Well, that's a hot call to a police officer. So they're going to respond like it was a bad woman with a gun. And there's going to be some real drama, you know, until they sort out that, no, you're just doing what the law allows. Well, we have to educate people, and I think a law that I would like to see pass is a law passed that if you call in a situation like this where somebody is not doing anything with a gun on their hip, and you call in person with a gun in this hysterical manner, then you're charged with filing a false police report. Because out at a Costco store in Phoenix, Arizona, I want to say about 3 years ago now, there was a fellow just out of the military who was awarded a number of decorations from his fighting in the desert, who was carrying concealed, was reaching for a high shelf, and somebody, the gun became unconcealed and somebody saw it and called in and made a call that there was just all sorts of craziness going on. And believe it or not, this genuine American hero was shot by the police as he exited.
That is very sad. Did the police get in trouble for doing that?
There is ongoing lawsuits right now, yes.
What a shame.
It was a thing of the hoplophobe saw it. The manager that the hoplophobe contacted was a hoplophobe himself. So it's just like when you tell a story going around the circle like you used to do, you know, around the campfire. The story gets bigger, it changes, where they send a SWAT team on what something should have been, you know, no big deal call, because the first person told the second it got bigger, the second person told the third it got bigger, until finally, you know, there was a hostage situation, which was just fabrication. And again, I think all around I'll keep mine concealed.
I support that. So while we were taking the class, I read something glaring in Missouri state law that concerned me. It said that nobody is allowed to carry a gun inside a church. So I questioned you about it, and you said the law had been amended to now allow guns if the leadership of that church gave their approval.
There's 20 prohibited places, churches, schools, jails, courthouses, government buildings, et cetera, et cetera. If the person who's in charge of that prohibited place gives permission, they can let one person or let anybody carry there. And we've sure taught a lot of ministers and, you know, deacons and trustees and, you know, folks like that in the last 5 years. So, you know, church shootings have skyrocketed. And if there's any place you should be safe, it's in the house of the Lord. And so consequently, they're stepping up and taking responsibility. I'm working with a safety team from a church right now, getting them trained up, not just for the basic concealed carry, but for the advanced skills we do in our advanced classes.
So as a housekeeping measure, when I realized there was a conflict in Missouri law, I thought I would pass a law to take out the provision that conflicted. So I filed a bill that simply said we're going to remove the word churches as places where guns are prohibited. And boy, was I in for a surprise, because I had such a backlash on something that was so easy. All I was trying to do is remove the archaic section so that the more modern section that says if the church authorities give you permission to have a gun, you can have a gun. The headlines read that Representative Davis wants guns in churches, and we had all kinds.
I remember seeing that, yeah. And I just laughed.
It just showed how ignorant the people are.
Hoplophobia.
Hoplophobia. So does that come from some Latin word?
Boy, this woman came up with the term. And it is a person who has an irrational fear, you know, against guns.
So I found out that there must be a lot of people in the media who would be irresponsible enough to write a headline that I'm trying to get guns in churches when that's already existing law. Nevertheless, it really woke me up to how freaked out people can get so quickly when we even just bring up the topic. And then I filed the Firearms Freedom Act, which should be, what these are bills that I would put in the no-brainer category. And all that said is that the federal government cannot regulate guns if they're in the state of Missouri under the Commerce Clause. If they are made in Missouri and they stay in Missouri, then it's a Missouri state issue, not a federal issue. So why is it that we can't have good laws that are that simple to pass? Why are all these no-brainer laws becoming that complicated that people just can't do what makes sense?
Well, and again, there's a movement that direction to try to do that, but there's an institutional resistance, I think, against common sense. I mean, every scientific study that's done shows that armed citizens are a good thing and reduce crime. For example, the Council General of Interpol, the International Police Association, after the shooting in the mall in Kenya, came out and said, hey, if there had been some people there with concealed carry, it probably wouldn't have lasted 3 or 4 days and 30-something people wouldn't have died. But again, Illinois, the last place, you know, to ever get concealed carry, finally under court order, you know, got it. Wisconsin before that, and Wisconsin's a fairly liberal place, and gun-wise, the rural areas pro-gun, the cities are anti-gun, sort of like what we've got here. But I think slowly the momentum is moving our way and bears out in FBI crime statistics showing that the violence goes down. Now, the interesting thing is the anti-gunners, if you as the victim shoot the bad guy, let's say, for example, you kill a bad guy, they count that as an incident of gun violence. But you see, it's not really an incident of gun violence. It's an incident of stopping violence against a victim.
Hi friends, do you like what you're hearing? Then go to my website. It's CynthiaDavis.net and sign up for my newsletter. You'll get all this information and more when you sign up for my email reminding you of when you'll hear another podcast and letting you know what's coming up next. Besides, we always have a little bit of humor at the end, so go to CynthiaDavis.net and stay in the loop. For those of you who don't like email, go to my Facebook page. It's called Homefront with Cynthia Davis. And make sure you click the like button. That way, you'll have a convenient way to see what we're doing and to get the word when another podcast is released. That's Homefront with Cynthia Davis on Facebook. My website is CynthiaDavis.net. That's where we keep all our good stuff. So if you want to get our newsletter and find more podcasts, go to CynthiaDavis.net. Hey, let's stay in touch. You've got a marvelous picture on your website of a card. Once the concealed weapon permit law passed in Missouri, so many business owners got suddenly afraid. What if somebody comes into my establishment with a concealed gun? Then what? And so we saw some businesses, including all government buildings that I know of, put up signs saying guns are prohibited on our premises. You have a card that people can give out that says, we have noticed your sign and will respect your wishes by doing business elsewhere. That's obviously very funny because it makes the point that economics are involved here. If you really want to prove to the public that any robbery can be committed here and we'll just call 911, what kind of message does that send?
Well, exactly. We call that card the No Guns, No Money card. They're available for free to download. You can print some off for yourself. I want to tell you a very funny story. The day the Supreme Court ruled in our favor, which was February 24, 2004, there were a lot of us at the Supreme Court listening to the hearing. And the group of pro-gun folks who'd been activists, who'd been trying to pass that, were probably about 15 of us. And so we walked a couple distance from the Supreme Court building to a very well-known restaurant in downtown Jeff City that I promised would remain nameless. And lo and behold, they'd put up a no-gun sign. Well, several members of the group pointed at the no-gun sign, and generally we won't do business with people who put up no-gun signs. And I said, no, it'll be okay. I know these folks. So I'm going to talk to them afterwards. So we had a big meal there that couldn't be beat and paid a big bill because it's a really nice restaurant. And as we're leaving, I said to the assistant manager, who's a nice lady, I said, you know, I'm really going to miss this place. And see, she'd been seeing me in there multiple times a week with, you know, various people for lunch, including some of the legislators for the last 13 years. And she said, oh, well, are you leaving town or what's happening? I'm just going, well, no, I can't come back. Well, what happened? Why can't you come back? I said, well, do you see that sign on your door? She says, yeah. I said, well, two-thirds of the legislator and me and all of these people that I brought here for lunch today worked really hard to pass concealed carry, and you're saying you don't want our kind here. Oh, no, 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 that's not what we're saying. I said, yeah, that is what you're saying. You're saying we don't want people who, you know, are carrying concealed weapons here, and so consequently I can't ever come back. But you spent a lot of money here over the years. I said, yeah, that's right. But I can't ever spend any more here. She says, well, the owner's out of town. Can I have him call you when he comes back in town? Absolutely. Here's my card. Call me. Well, I called him. They had a nice hour-long conversation with the guy. And lo and behold, the sign came down as a result of that card. Well, what I found out had happened is the Missouri Restaurant Association had had one member on the board who was rapidly anti-gun. And he sent out a thing to all members of the Missouri Restaurant Association to say, hey, if you let these people carry guns in there, your insurance is going to be no good. Now, this was a lie. And when a person that I knew on the board told me about that, and they went back and checked and said, no, absolutely, that's a lie, well, the Missouri Restaurant Association was forced to retract that and say, use your own judgment. So, yeah, the cards have changed and cut back a lot of the people who initially responded, you know, to the shock of it. But this is how it's always been. Every state that passes it, the signs go up. Some time goes by. There's no shootouts. There's no, you know, et cetera. And so then finally the signs come down because we really do boycott places with signs. If I'm going out to eat, if I'm going out to buy clothing, if I'm going to do whatever, and you've got a sign up, guess what? You're not getting any of my money.
Good going. That is how we vote. We vote with our wallets. Also, we educate people with our wallets. I applaud you, Tim, for doing that because you were part of defining the culture and helping people learn. I've been perusing some of the bills being filed this year. One of them, I'll call it a head-scratcher because I don't fully understand. Why is there a push to reduce the age when people can get a concealed permit from 21 to 19? And the reason I ask this is I have raised 5 children so far beyond the age of 21. And as a mom, it doesn't bother me for them to wait till they're 21. After all, they have to wait till they're 21 to drink alcohol, buy alcohol. I think kids today are less mature than they've ever been. They're more pampered. Even Barack Obama claims that they should be on your parents' insurance policy until they're 26 now, even if they're married. So I am seeing a less mature 21-year-old today than what I saw 2 decades ago. Furthermore, the whole 8 years I was in the Missouri State Legislature, I never once had one person say to me, well, I'm 19 and I'm upset that I can't carry a concealed weapon yet. So I'm not worried about whether it passes or not. For me, it's not a big deal. I don't think it will make a huge difference. But who is pushing the age when they can have a concealed weapon permit down to 19?
Well, I think it's just a general push of people who are 19, who are out living on their own, et cetera. you know, we're one of the same protections older people have. When we first passed our law, you know, it was age 23. And when the law first passed in 2003, there were about a dozen states that had it at 23. The majority had it at 21, and there were a few that had it at 18. Well, now there are no states left that have it at 23. Their majority are still 21, but there are some states have it as young as 18. And we made a change 2 years ago to allow people who were in the military, who had served in the military, or were under contract to go into the military, like ROTC, you know, men and women, to be able to carry. See, it's not a question of chronological age, it's a question of maturity. And I know people who are 30 who aren't mature enough to be carrying a gun, and I know people at 18 that are mature enough, and so we can't sort of regulate maturity or legislate maturity, so we do it sort of roughly with this, just because, like, you know, there are people who are 50 years old who can't handle alcohol, and there's people who are 20 years old that can, but again, there had to be a line someplace, and in Missouri law, the way the law is written is we have universal recognition, meaning we recognize everybody's permits. So if you're 18 years old and you're mature, and or you're out on your own, you can actually get a Maine permit, which is good here in Missouri, without ever going to Maine. What we did when it was 23 was, again, by recognition, you can get a Florida permit at 21 that was good here. Because, I mean, who's to say the maturity level of 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, it's something just not easy to measure.
That's a good answer, Tim. Do you have people trying to get Maine permits?
We've had dozens of people get Maine permits, and primarily college co-eds who were going out on their own, you know, to live away from the folks for the first time.
Yeah, I was surprised at how expensive a permit is in Missouri. It seems like the sheriffs decided they'd charge the maximum they could. I believe some sheriffs would probably make the fee $5,000 if the law would let them. Because they...
Oh, absolutely they would. And see, this was one of the things that we were negotiating with them on throughout the 90s, in that in about 93 or 94, we'd been campaigning about 3 or 4 years, and a member of the Chiefs Association, one of the lobbyists down there, came and said, hey, we would be willing to not oppose this if the fee were $500 a year. And the idea was not so much they wanted the money, but they wanted a certain class and race of people not to be able to afford to get one. It was exclusionary. So there were certain things we would not compromise on in passing law. Like, it had to be available to everybody. Like, you know, we couldn't, say, have restriction against people in the big cities having one. And again, there was stuff we'd compromise on, like the age, like the amount of the fee. We have got about an average fee, which is $100, no more than $100. If you look nationwide how much it costs, you run from free in Indiana to a low of 35 to a high of about a couple hundred dollars if you looked at all states across the board.
So why is it better to get a Maine permit than a Missouri permit?
Because you can get it at 18.
Okay. How much does it cost to get one from the state of Maine?
I believe it's $90.
Okay, so there's not a whole lot of savings there, but nevertheless, people aren't dumb. I mean, you've got to expect them to be smart enough to figure out what's the best way to go on all of their affairs.
Florida, for example, has a permit that's $117, but it's a 7-year permit. Well, our permit, again, which is $100, and I'm talking just for the permit, the training is additional. For just the permit, we can't be over $100, and it just went from a 3-year permit to a 5-year permit. Well, see, money-wise, Florida would be the more economical, but again, the Missouri permit is recognized by more states than any other permit. We've got the most recognized permit. I want to say it's good in 37, 38 states.
Why not do a lifetime permit? What is going to change that makes it necessary for us to reevaluate people every 3 years?
Well, and there's a movement to that. Indiana just recently, 2 years ago, went to a lifetime permit. You know, through it one time, you've got it for life. What happens is people's life circumstances change. Through my work as an investigator with lawyers, I've been involved in some divorce situations, and people getting divorced run from a little bit to a lot crazy. It's just a really emotional time. You've got people who were clean and sober who, you know, fall off the wagon. You've got people who fell off the wagon who get back on the wagon and stay the rest of their life. It's just life circumstances change, and I'm not arguing for or against a lifetime permit. But, again, that's sort of the reasons people say against it.
Why would we need to have a permit at all if the Second Amendment says that the government can't make laws to infringe on our right to bear arms?
I agree totally. See, and Vermont has that. Arizona has that. Alaska has that. They understand the Second Amendment the way you and I understand it. But the problem is if you are carrying in Alaska and you don't have the permit and you come to Missouri, well, you can't carry here. Alaska and Arizona both have a permit system that is largely for carrying outside the state so that you have recognition or reciprocity. But no, again, you shouldn't have to have a permit. The problem is you get caught without it, it's a felony.
So you're saying that the only states that do not require a permit are states that have never required a permit, and once we do require a permit, it's very difficult to go back to not requiring one at all?
Well, no, Vermont is the only state that has never required a permit. And what I'm saying, and Vermont has been the example, Vermont is what we all want, but we can't all have what we want. Then Alaska followed Vermont and saying, okay, you get off the airplane, you know, in Alaska, you can strap the gun on, you can carry concealed, no permit. Arizona did the same thing later. But what I'm saying is this, is if you were carrying in one of those states by their, you know, just under the U.S. Constitutional Second Amendment, if you go to the state next door and you do the same thing, you carry concealed, and they don't have that same law, well, then you're in trouble as you travel across the country.
I remember the debate we had over the government buildings prohibiting guns, and then later they also took it so far as saying you can't have a gun in the parking lot, and one of the gentlemen who came to testify was telling this ridiculous story about how he went into the government building, saw the sign saying he couldn't have a gun, took the gun back out to put it in his car, saw the sign on the parking lot that said he can't have the gun in his car either. He asked, what am I supposed to do, throw it in the bushes until after I get done with my appointment?
Oh, exactly. And, I mean, again, that's one of the things we changed last year was whether you were an employee of the executive, legislative, or judicial branch, you could have guns in government parking lots. But you see, by excluding the parking lots, we're also making it to where you're not safe going to work or coming home from work or wherever else your errands might take you during that day. So that has been changed.
If you could wave your magic wand and have the legislature pass anything that would benefit our cause this year, what would you want them to pass?
Because there's a lot. I would start with a full-strength castle doctrine that would allow you, the castle doctrine, right, not having a duty to retreat, et cetera, any place you're lawfully allowed to be. Right now, the castle doctrine only protects you in your home, on your business property, or in your vehicle, but not on the dark and lonely shopping center parking lot. So having sort of the full-strength castle doctrine, no duty to retreat, any place you're lawfully allowed to be would be my number one thing, I think.
In general, is our country becoming more supportive of freedom, or are we becoming more opposed to freedom?
I think we've got to divide the country geographically. On the east and west coast, I think things are becoming more restrictive because they're passing more restrictive laws. I think here in the heartland, and I would say from the Rockies to the Appalachians, we're moving in the right direction.
Well, that sounds really like you've got some understanding of where we're going. I'm glad to be from Missouri. Is there any one last thing you want to tell our listeners if they want to contact their legislators or what you recommend they do?
Well, here's the thing. You've got to get involved. The 2014 elections are going to be critical to the direction this country goes. And you have to pay attention. You've got to get involved. You can't just have your head stuck in the sand and let people get away with, well, we have to pass law to find out what's in it. I mean, that's what has got us in this horrible situation we are in. And we have the Obama administration trying to do things not just on guns, but on a lot of things that are going to take a lot of our freedoms away. Both the Republicans and the Democrats have elements that want more control or anti-freedom. In the Republican Party, most of the gun people that I know are only going to be supporting the Tea Party Republicans because the way we've been treated by the traditional establishment rhino, type Republicans. And this 2014 is where there's got to be a stand.
Well, thank you, Tim. Do you have a website you want people to go to if they'd like to learn more or take your class?
Absolutely, I do. LearnToCarry.com is my website where we've got information both on politics and on our courses and what we're doing. I send out a newsletter when I feel like sitting down and writing one. Learn to Carry News and Views. There's a button there. You can subscribe to that. And also, I'm co-host on a radio show every Saturday morning here in Columbia called Gary on Guns. And people can listen live in the Columbia area at the Eagle 93.9, or you can listen on the internet at the Eagle 93.939.com. And it's 2 hours of gun talk each and every Saturday morning.
Thanks so much, Tim. We appreciate you coming on with us and hope that you be safe. You always write at the end of your letters, be safe. And I love that because that's the message for all of us. Thank you, and you have a good day.
Thank you, and you keep up the good work. Good to talk to you.
This has been another edition of Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis and hope you enjoyed our program. Please join us next week when we offer another infusion of truth, honesty, and solutions that will grow people bigger and shrink government smaller. Thank you for joining us. See you next week.